you don't, the fact of the matter is that you don't know. What you do have is years of experience. What you have is maybe a good understanding of the product and the client and the, you know, the structure in which you work in, but you don't know everything.
Hey, Packaging Peeps, it's Valley Montes on Packaging Unboxed. Today, I'm super stoked to share this episode with you. We are talking to creative director Jaime Cabrera. His book, What's the Big Idea? An Indispensable Guide to Becoming a Kick-Ass Creative Director, is available now on Amazon. You can check out the link that's in the show notes. We get into so many different conversations in terms of what it takes to become a creative director. Like, how do you get there? When, what do you do when you get, what do you do when you become one? Plus, how do you manage up to a creative director if you're a junior designer? Jaime's book is meant for anybody that's aspiring to become a creative director, or maybe this is like your first year as a creative director. The truth is that if you don't really have a mentor or somebody that you can talk to about what it's like to be in that position of a creative director, you're going to get a huge dose of imposter syndrome. It happens to everybody, happens to the best of us. But that's why this book is so important. Before we get to it, do me a huge favor, subscribe to the channel, leave us a review, leave us a comment, wherever it is that you're listening or watching this episode. Anything you'd love to learn about packaging, let us know. This episode is brought to you by IDPDirect.com, the only factory direct packaging manufacturer that specializes in sustainable retail packaging made in their own factories, which is going to save you a ton of money from having to pay distributor markups. If you need to buy packaging, check out IDPDirect.com. This episode is also brought to you by SpecRight.com, your packaging specification management platform. Why would you want this? Well, it's going to streamline project management. It's going to standardize your design processes. It's going to manage all your documentation, among a million other things. If you're buying packaging already, check out specrite.com. You can manage all of your packaging, especially if you've got like a high number of SKUs. And this Packaging Unboxed podcast episode is also brought to you by packdora.com, P-A-C-D-O-R-A.com, the online packaging design platform that's going to allow you to create production ready die lines and 3D renders in seconds of thousands of packaging constructions. If you need to design packaging, check out packdora.com. And last, if you want to catch me live, I'll be speaking at Paris Packaging Week, January 25th and 26th. And I'll also be speaking at Packaging Premiere in Milan, May 16th through the 18th. Thanks so much for joining us. We got Jaime Cabrera. Well, before you give us a quick rundown on yourself, thanks so much for being on, man. I appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, man. Thank you, Elio. Did I say it right? Because we were having a conversation about name pronunciation and how important it is to us. So I said it right, right?
Evelio. Yep, 100%. Evelio.
All right. Yeah. Love it.
So, Jaime, can you give us a rundown on who you are and what you do?
So my name is Jaime Cabrera. I'm a veteran creative director, having worked in the business for probably, man, close to 25 years now for a variety of different agencies, doing all kinds of different types of work. I sort of cut my teeth doing TV spots for cable, which is kind of a madness unto its own, which I can tell you some other time over beers, to producing radio, to jingles, to content, to experiential, to really any number of things. I've kind of done it all. Most importantly, I'm a dad to two awesome boys, and I have a beautiful wife. I live in Long Beach, California. I host a podcast called Confessions of a Creative Director, and I'm about to launch a book on the same subject of being a creative director called What's the Big Idea? An Indispensable Guide to Becoming a Kick-Ass Creative Director. So I guess to summarize, I'm a creative director at heart, and that's what I love to do, and that's what I love to talk about. So sure.
Like, really, what's their job? What are they supposed to do? And two, like, what's the real path to getting there, right? So that's the goal here, is like, we're going to kind of dig into some of this stuff. So
sure. That's a great question. And that's a question that I usually ask of all my guests, right? Because everybody sees the role a little bit differently. And I love metaphors because they help me understand things a lot quicker and a lot, a lot easier. And, you know, people have described it as being a conductor to an orchestra, right? The conductor doesn't actually play any instruments, but he's helping all the other people play their best performance, right? So he, depending on that person's energy, right, They're driving the tempo. They're highlighting people to do a solo, right? They're elevating the horns to play louder, or whatever it might be, right? So some people have described it as a conductor. One of my favorites is somebody said, it's like being a caddy, because you're not playing, but you're helping folks select the right club. You've played the course. You know that it's going to dogleg right, or that, you know, they should, you know, the greens are fast, so they should maybe, you know, make this adjustment. So it's really, you're sort of moving from a star player to becoming a coach, or as somebody else said, a player manager, right? Because you still want to get in there and get your hands dirty and create, but you're really more of a manager of creatives.
Besides managing, what's the sole responsibility of a creative director?
I think the sole responsibility is to make the work better and make it as strong and effective as it can be. That really is, if you had to summarize what the job is, that's really what it is, right? So that could be anything from reviewing work and giving feedback and recommendations that's going to make the work stronger or more effective, right? It's going to help make the work more on whatever the brief is. And, you know, it could also be setting the tone, right? So that's the whole briefing process, which is, I think, really probably the most important part, is making sure that first initial instruction is as accurate and as, you know, as descriptive and as, you know, deliberative as it can be, right? It's like, look at this brief. It's telling you exactly what we need to create, right, to achieve these goals.
If you work with an agency, and every agency is different,
right?
There are some agencies where brands want to work with agency X because of the creative director. They're a known entity.
Sure.
And there are other agencies that you want to work with because you know the work that comes out of there, where the creative director almost takes a back seat and pushes the work forward.
I would like to think that, you know, the creative director, it's kind of one and the same, right? Mm-hmm. If the creative director is doing a good job, the work should be really solid. And I think that oftentimes the creative directors that you don't see or hear about are probably maybe even better, right? Because they're not wanting to take the limelight, or they're not wanting to take the credit, because at the end of the day, it's the other people that are doing the work, right? Yeah. So in some ways, maybe that's better that you don't know who the creative director is, but the work is really good, because that means that hopefully he or she is providing all the direction and helping shape the work, but letting the teams, you know, run with it, and at the end of the day, take the final credit, because they created the work, right? This person helped shape it, helped drive it forward. But you know, there is that whole mythology, right, of the creative director, right, which is super strong in I don't know if I would say the culture, but it's super strong and kind of like you mentioned earlier, right? In TV, you think of Don Draper, you think of these other people that are super charismatic and own the room and stand up and just speak eloquently off the cuff, and the client stands up and claps and signs the contract, and you know, so there's that kind of mental picture in our head. But I would say some of the best creative directors that I've known are quiet, are reserved, don't necessarily love that part of it, but they help drive really great work.
Do you think it's still a reference today? Do you think Mad Men still is a reference for anybody under 30?
That's a great question. I hadn't thought about that.
Our creative director, Don Draper.
He's not my first creative director.
I think there's still some lessons to be learned from knowing that show and that character, but that's a great point. I mean, I wonder if there is a, you know, if somebody out there is developing some new version of that, because I think it, you know, it probably exists, but now it's more like these entrepreneurial leaders, right? Maybe it's Gary Vee or somebody like that, that somebody's modeling a show after. I don't know.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, like Chris Doe, you know, is that the,
yeah, I've had Chris Doe on my show. Yeah. Yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah. He's great. So how do you become a creative director? Can you go to school to become a creative director? Can you graduate as a creative director? Like, how do you get there?
Another great question. I don't know that's true. And that's one of the reasons why I started the podcast and eventually wrote the book, because I felt like I could have really benefited from some understanding of what the role would require. I don't think that that it is the case that you can graduate as a creative director. I don't think so. I think you sort of have to work your way up. Typically, you know, you are working your way up, and there's two different routes, in my opinion, to getting there, right? You can come in and be sort of a writer, which is more of what I am. I'm more of a conceptual writer thinker. I'm not a designer. And then there's a designer, right? More of coming in through the visual side. So there's two sort of paths that you can take. I've learned to art direct, and I've learned to recognize, you know, good design and how to, you know, art direct, but I'm not a designer. I couldn't do it myself. So there's sort of two paths, which already makes things tricky, because you could get somebody up in the role of creative director that came up through the visual part that may not understand the conceptual part, or, you know, or vice versa. If I had to choose one, and I'm being biased because obviously I'm a writer, but in my opinion, I feel like the best creative directors are the ones that understand language and writing and words. And then you also have an understanding of the visual side, of the design side, man, you're unbeatable. But if I had to choose one skill set, that would be it. And I'll probably piss off part of your audience, but to me, that's the most, because once you have it, and I was just talking to somebody about this, right? The idea, the concept, the one word sentence to me is the most valuable thing, because then if you can nail that, then everything else will flow from it, right? The design should be able to flow from this one written idea. So I think, you know, personally, I think that that's, you know, the stronger side. And then to your question about, you know, some people getting to that point and realizing that it's not for them, or maybe somebody else realizing that they're not good at it. Yeah, that can be super tricky. And it is an ego thing, right? To get to the creative director, you're like, yeah, I've arrived. And you realize, oh shit.
Yeah, this isn't
for me. I don't like this. Yeah, or this isn't for me. Or somebody worse, somebody else says that isn't for that person. And then what do you do? I interviewed a guy named Peter Claes from, he's now I think he works for FCB now. He's a copywriter. And he talked about thinking that he wanted to become a creative director. He got to that role and he was like, I lost the smile. He was so sad. He was like, I lost the smile that I used to have going into work every day. And I realized that it wasn't for me. And he said, he told his boss, like, I just want to go back to being a copywriter. And he did. And he's super happy. And, you know, you can still make, if you're good at your job, you're still going to be able to make the money. Right. And maybe you'll never get to that title, but if you're happy, it's like, who cares?
And you've got to be able to tell a great story. So a lot of designers, I tell them, you've got to learn to write. Like, you have to, you know, take a couple classes, you know, go to the copywriting course online.
Yeah.
Like, just start figuring that out.
Yeah. Two things. So I would recommend this book. It is called I think it's called Self Help for Copywriters by Dan Nelken. I'm actually interviewing him here pretty soon. And then the other thing too, that's interesting to think about is, you know, I don't know if I'm sure you've seen all this stuff going on. It kind of died down a little bit, but it was super hot on LinkedIn for a while. This whole thing around Midjourney and AI, right? So I talked to some folks on the podcast about this. Like, isn't it interesting that Midjourney runs on words, right? And the people, in my opinion, the people that know how to articulate the language part of it, they type it into the computer and it spits out these images. Granted, maybe it's not quite there yet, or it's missing some humanity or whatever, but it's getting pretty damn close, right? So isn't it interesting that it comes down to language, and the people that are going to be able to feed the computer what it needs to hear and generate these images, I feel like they have a leg up, right? Wow. So again, that goes to your point about being a writer.
That just blew my mind. as I'm goofing off in Midjourney and I'm talking to designers, you know, I reached out to this guy in Liverpool and he's creating like some amazing things on Midjourney. I'm like, what are your prompts? Like, what are you doing? And he's like, dude, it took me like 6 months to just figure out the prompts. And, you know, he sends him over. He's like, don't share them with anybody because it's like, you know, it's like gold. I'm like, wow, you know, it's hard for a designer to get there. But you're right. As a writer, like, that's just every day.
Yeah.
It's like breathing. I mean,
so the one of the original ones, or one of the things that got a lot of press, was somebody had, I think, created a cover for a magazine using AI. And if I remember correctly, it was like an astronaut or something. And it was sort of like a low angle shot. And the thing that caught my eye or caught my attention was that the use of the word swagger or something like that. And it said, I think the prompt was something about an astronaut walking on the moon with swagger. Right.
Right.
And that word changed everything. Because if it just said walking on the moon,
right,
I'm like, okay, I'm going to get an image, but you instantly understand what swagger is, right? You instantly understand how a person's body position might be when they've got swagger, and that changes everything. So again, language, right? Somebody that doesn't understand language might have just said walking, or somebody might have said walking confidently. Okay, getting close, right. But swagger,
yeah.
That's a whole different idea. So yeah, it's kind of interesting.
That's nuts. So talking about AI, and I know we want to focus on creative director, but I've got you here, so I want to talk to you about writing too. With AI, it's funny. I built an entire like 40-page site using Jarvis. So it's an AI copywriter.
Oh, really?
Right. Okay. Which is nuts. But it was, you know.
Oh shit! Now I'm gonna get pissed off. Now I'm gonna talk out of the outside. Computers will not overtake. No. Okay. No, I want to know about this. I want to hear about this. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you know, you you go in and you type in who you want to sound like, and how many words you want to use, and what are the keywords, and it writes in that person's style. So just like you can prompt Midjourney to output something like Picasso, you can do it on Jarvis and say, you know, I want you to write like, I don't know, pick your favorite commercial copywriter.
Right. That's funny. Yeah. Isn't it funny that I'm not aware of that? Like what kind of biases? And I think I have heard of it maybe briefly now that you mentioned the name, but isn't it funny that I haven't experimented with that? But here's the thing that's even crazier, right? And maybe this will blow your mind too, is, you know, people talk about AI and the moment that it becomes, I think the word is sentient, which means that it's self-aware. So now you got a computer or, you know, a program that understands how to create art from words, and you've got a computer that knows how to generate words. And now really, you know, will they just take over, and like nobody will need any of us anymore. And they're just going to be like creating their own, you know, advertising for us.
So back to creative directors. Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, if you're at that early stage, you should be really comfortable asking more questions and having more answers.
A good creative director creates an environment that's really safe for people to contribute, for people to ask questions, for people to be able to push back and say, hey, I think we should try it like this. I think that, you know, creative director that's really good makes that possible, which then should allow people to be able to feel comfortable saying, hey, you know, I'd love to try this. Would you be open to that? You know, or just in general, being able to kind of push back and try new things, right? But I do think that there's probably a lot of creative directors that are like, no, this is my way. This is, you know, my way or the highway. And the moment, because at the end of the day, look, if you as a creative director knew everything and had this perfect solution for everything, what are you doing in that role? You should be a billionaire. The fact of the matter is that you don't know. What you do have is years of experience. What you have is maybe a good understanding of the product and the client and the, you know, the structure in which you work in, but you don't know everything, especially now with, you know, everything. I mean, it seems like every few days there's some new trend or some new thing on TikTok or Instagram or whatever. There's no way you can understand it all. So as younger people are coming in and they're telling you, and you're not willing to listen and say, okay, well, I don't understand it, but, you know, play it out for me. How could it work? And if you're not willing to listen to that, A, and B, every once in a while, take a chance on it, then I think you're going to go, you know, the way of the dinosaur, and you're just going to be obsolete. You can't know every time what's going to work, right? All you can do is make calculated risks, right? So if you have a young creative that's super passionate about this idea, and they, you know, they keep coming back to you with it, and at a certain point, you got to go, okay, there must be something here. Let's try it. And as a creative director, you have to take the final responsibility, right? This is just another thing that makes it for a bad creative director, right? It's a creative director that wants to take all the credit when things are good, things go well.
Yeah.
And then they don't want to take any of the blame when things are not, you know, it's like, if you signed off on it, you're like, I don't know about this, but you seem really passionate about it. I've done the research. It looks like it could work. Let's try it. And if it fails, you don't tell your client, yeah, sorry, client. It wasn't me. It was, you know, young so-and-so that wanted to do that. You go like, yeah, I signed off on it. Mm-hmm. We tried it. It didn't work. And then on the flip side, then you can have the conversation with the younger client. And it's like, hey, it didn't work this time. Doesn't mean we're not going to try it again, but let's try to make, you know, better calculated risks next time. But you have to take the responsibility if it doesn't work.
You know, you mentioned being in front of the client. You mentioned contracts and stuff like that at the very beginning here. So is a creative director, do they also need to be a salesperson?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think they need to know how to sell creative and how to pitch creative for sure. Yeah. And that's not for everybody, right? As I mentioned, there's some creative directors that are sort of reserved and maybe that's not their thing, which is not to say that if you're selling creative, you have to be super animated and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
Because I've known some creative directors who are very quiet or very soft-spoken, who can sell things all day long. It's almost like that quietness sort of draws people in. And then I've seen others that are super charismatic and have the same results. But I do think that you need to figure out your personal way of doing your best to sell something. But yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the gig. I will say that you definitely need to have a very good account person that's working with you to sell it.
Yeah.
And I think as a team, you can kind of, you know, fill in the blanks or fill in the weaknesses for the other person. But I think it's a team effort, right? Because a really good account person will help you get it across the finish line.
If you're a designer working with a creative director, what's the best way that you've found to manage up?
Yeah, I talk about this in my book a little bit. It's about critical thinking. What happens a lot of times in our world, right, is we're moving so fast. And, you know, depending on the size of the shop and the client and all that, a creative director could be pulled in many different directions. So they have limited time. So they're maybe not going to give you everything in a perfect world up front, let's say with the brief or, you know, setting you up. So what I think this has been helpful to me is just applying some critical thinking and saying, okay, you know, my creative director has been able to set aside that much time. I got a pretty good brief, but still have some questions. I'm going to apply critical thinking and come up with something that I think will work. And I'm going to make a plan for it. And I'm going to put it down on paper, which is key, which I can talk about more in a second here. But I'm going to put it down on paper. And then I'm going to get in front of the creative director and say, hey, thank you for the brief. I know you didn't have a lot of time to talk about it or give a lot of directions. I think that I've got a good handle on it. And here's what I came up with. And here it is on paper. And let me walk you through it and my thinking and why I thought this way. And take the initiative to put something down on paper. Because if you wait, you're waiting for more direction. A, I think it's a crutch. And I think it's an excuse. And B, you're going to lose so much time that it's going to make things, because the client's not going to care that you couldn't get in front of your creative director. They're going to want the work when they want it, right? So you get it down on paper, you think through it critically and say, I don't know if this is right, but I took a stab at it and I would love to walk you through it. And then the creative director, you've saved him or her a lot of time. They're going to look at it and hopefully it's good or it's close. And if not, then that person's going to be able to say like, this is good, but this needs work, or, you know, God forbid they say it's completely wrong, which it shouldn't be the case, but You're going to be that much more ahead. And I think, I know I am impressed when this happens. Your creative director is going to be like, man, this person took the initiative. They, you know, took the information they had, they applied critical thinking to it, and they came to me with a plan. And that is like worth its weight in gold, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, a brief can change. You know, as much as we hate it, sure, sometimes a brief can change. And if you're putting something down on paper and you're sharing that with your creative director, saying, you know, this is what I felt, and you walk them through that, you're also giving them an opportunity to see what the results are or how somebody's understanding what they put down as this brief. You know, they may go back and say, oh, I understand why you got to this point. And there may be some, you know, tightening up or redirection, yeah, that needs to happen.
You've saved a ton of time, and you are also showing your potential, right? You're also showing the potential, like, wow, this, mm-hmm, person is a critical thinker. They took the initiative. This could be somebody that works their way up to be me, to be the, you know, creative director or something like that, right? So, yeah, you show the initiative. It may not be for everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe personality rise, but you should try to, if this is not your, you should at least try, because at the end of the day, it's also only going to make your life better as, let's say, the designer. Because if you wait, right, to get more detailed information or feedback from your creative director, you will have lost time. The deadline's not going to change. So guess what's going to happen? You're going to be, as a designer or the copywriter, right, you're going to be the one that has to, you know, pull an all-nighter to get it done to meet the deadline, as opposed to getting in front of it sooner and you know, getting the feedback that you need and going from there.
In your book, you talk about keeping your creative bank account,
yes,
full. How do you do that? Whether you're a creative director or designer, how do you keep that,
yeah,
account?
So it's this
stocked
idea called creative capital, right? And my thesis or my hypothesis is that creatives have sort of this bank of creative capital in their head. And like you said, it's like a bank account. You use that capital as you're designing things and you're, you know, creating things and whatnot. And it starts to get depleted. And in my opinion, the only way to kind of replenish that is, A, if you're doing this work, let's say for an RFP, right, to win business, is that you actually win the business and you, mm-hmm, get to do the work and you see your idea and your vision come to life, that it's like, you know, it kind of like you're starting to see it, you know, rain in your bank account. You're getting that, you're replenishing that. I think the other, or another way to do it is by giving people an opportunity to recharge. And that may mean literally a day off. It may mean, hey, why don't you and the team go to the Meow Wolf exhibit, or go check out this art thing. I'm going to pay for it. And they replenish that because they're like seeing things and they're getting excited about other things. And they're like, you know, rebuilding that capital. So I think I like that idea because I think everybody can understand when you're overdrawn. Right. And it just hopefully will help people remember, like, this isn't a, yes, I guess in theory it's an infinite resource, creativity, but on an individual level, you'll burn somebody out and they will be depleted if you don't take care of them in those ways, right? Help them win the business, help them see their ideas come to life. Help, that's where the selling comes into play, right? Help sell through those ideas that they're going to be able to see, wow, I made that. Or give them opportunities to replenish that through experiences, through time off, through, you know, sending them to a conference, whatever it might be, make that investment.
So as a, you know, creative director, you're going to not only be selling, right? You've got external sales and internal sales. You've got to make sure that you personally are keeping your creative capital up as well as your staff. But then there's the other part of it, which is like the hiring and firing part of this. What's the right way to do this?
I talk about this in the book as well. The thing that I like to do is, you have to be very, resumes can be tricky in one way or the other, right? Somebody that looks great on paper in real life, and it's happened to me, is not good. And vice versa, there's some people whose resumes, you know, don't really tell a great story. Their titles are maybe different, but they can produce, you know, that at the end of the day, they might be able to produce great results. So the first step is like really applying a critical eye to looking through resumes and portfolios and, you know, information that you get, and being able to say like, hey, this person isn't called a creative director, but they sent me some of the work that they've done, and I've spoken to them, and I think they could be. Or, you know, you got to do your due diligence and look at their materials and whatnot. Obviously, you're moving in a fast pace, so you have to make sometimes some split second decisions if you're looking at a bunch of stuff. But if something catches your eye, dig a little bit deeper. You might find something interesting. The second thing is, I am a big believer in the test assignment, and I agree it is completely wrong to ask for work for real work. So we always make it sort of a fake project or a fake brand or something. And what I try to do is I try to make it so that it's not super heavy lifting. And we limit it. We say, we just want this to be on 5 pages. We're going to give you a finite amount of time, because that's also key, right? It's like, if you give somebody 3 weeks to do something, you may not get a good sense of how quick they are, or, you know, what kind of critical thinking they have or whatever. But if you say, hey, let me know when you have, 48 hours to do this assignment, I'm going to send it to you, right? So that's the other thing, is we try to time it. So it's like, okay, we're going to send it to you on Friday, send it back on Monday. We just want to get your thoughts on this. And typically I'll provide like a little sheet that has like some facts and figures, right? On the target audience or the market or whatever. And then I'll give them sort of like a little bit of a brief, and I'll say, give me an experiential concept that delivers on these things. Or if it's a design project, it's like, how would you design? I think I've done a t-shirt thing, right? It's like, how would you design a t-shirt, or what would your design for a t-shirt be that supports this initiative, or whatever it is, you know, but make it so that it's not, you know, super taxing. Cause I don't think that's fair. And I think that that's, you know, I don't think that's too much to ask. You know, although there's been, I think on one occasion, where we did do it as a real assignment, and we did pay for it. We did say, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to give you X amount of money to do this, because we were trying to kill two birds with one stone on that one. But yeah, we did pay for it, because I do agree that's a lot to ask for.
Yeah, you know, I've got a bunch of friends that are chefs, and in the kitchen, like one thing that they do is when you're being hired, you know, if you make it through the interview process, if you're at that final stage, they'll ask you to come in and prepare a meal, and they'll just give you, this is the ingredients we have.
Yeah.
We're, you know, give us a 4-course meal.
Love it.
And it just shows one, it shows like how clean you keep things, how you organize yourself. Again, it's that thinking. You want to see the thinking in action. Right.
I love that. So, side note here, I don't know if you've been watching, have you seen The Bear?
No, I haven't.
On Hulu. It's a show about this kind of like troubled chef. Highly recommend it. Highly, highly recommend it. Great, great show. But I love that analogy. And I think, you know, that's also probably one that goes up there with being a creative director, right? Is you're kind of like, you're not necessarily cooking, but you're designing, helping design menus, or you're preparing the ingredients, or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. This is how backwards I am on TV, actually. I just started watching The Office. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good little show. That's a good little show. Oh yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I just started, like this week I started watching The Office.
That's awesome.
So you also talk about in your book, you talk about thinking conceptually before tactically.
Yep.
Like what does that mean?
What's sort of what we were talking about earlier, right? It's about, before somebody in that I interviewed on my show and is in the book, mm-hmm. it's a veteran CD, his name is Ed Miller, says, if you can tell me what the idea is in a few words, then and I understand it and I'm excited by it, you've got a concept. If you have to show me things, then it's likely an execution, right? It's a tactic. It's like, hey, here's what's, if you can't tell me what it is in a few words, then it's not, you know, a concept. And that's what I mean. It's like, let's think about what is the concept before we get into execution. So I'll give you another great example from the book. I interviewed a creative director from GSD&M. Her name is Lee Brown. And she was telling me about something that they do when they're coming up with TV spots. And this particular assignment was for a Super Bowl spot. Okay, so you can imagine the competition and the pressure within the agency to come up with this. And she said what they did was before they started, because some people come in with full scripts and storyboards and, you know, she said, what we did was we came up with a premise. And it's literally a few words on a piece of paper. And it's just the premise. It was a premise for a commercial. And this particular commercial, I remember because it was so awesome. It was for Super Bowl. It was for avocados from Mexico, right? Which is tough already.
Yeah.
And they wanted it to have a football vibe, right? So the concept that they came up with was so clever. And this was the premise. The premise was, what would it look like if we went back in time to the very first draft of the world, right? You know how the NFL has their draft where they pick players and whatnot. But this was the very first draft of the whole world, right? So you have these people. It was sort of like God or, you know, this council of people deciding what countries were going to get what, right? So it was like, China is on the clock and they select spices or whatever it was, right? And then when it got to Mexico, it's like, you know, Mexico selects the avocado, right? And then like Australia got the sloth or I don't know. It was really, really clever. But that was the premise. Yeah. The premise was, what would it look like? What did the very first draft of the whole world look like?
And that's funny.
You get that, right? Hopefully you get that as a creative person. You're like, oh my God, that's amazing. So just by signing off on that premise, then they went to work and started scripting because they could have gone a number of ways, right? But it was just that concept first. They didn't need to have a whole script yet. That will come because if you get the premise and the concept excites you, then you'll be able to get to a great solution. But if the concept doesn't excite you and it's not interesting, then, you know, really who cares? But that one has stuck in my head. It's like, oh my God, I love that. It's just like, let's just talk about the concept.
With the next pick in the first draft ever, Australia selects the kangaroo.
Yes.
And Mexico selects
beach.
The avocado.
Great pick.
That makes a ton of sense.
No, I love that example because as you're explaining it, I'm already laughing. It's a great concept and going a million different directions visually, but if I don't like the concept, I'm not even going to think about how many ways it can go. I'm like, all right, right. How do we end this?
It was so good. And she said that they did that wasn't, you know, the only one they did, but that's the way that they approached it. It's like, let's not worry about that. And guess what? Think about how many concepts or premises you can come up with versus, okay, we came up with one thing and then the team spent all night writing full treatments for it and commercials, and we made visuals and we did this, that, and how many are you going to get versus we're just going to focus on this part. You know, if you got a good team, you could come up maybe with, you know, who knows, any number of it, as opposed to like, we went all in on this thing and you're going to, you know, die on the cross for it and it sucks and nobody likes it. And then what? You're screwed.
Yeah. No, that's great, man. So as we're wrapping up, the book is What's the Big Idea?
Yep.
I'm super stoked about this. If I order the book and I read this book, what is the one thing that you want me to get out of it as a reader?
The biggest lesson I think I would want people to walk away with is, I guess, two things. I start the very first chapter.
You get one.
Oh, I only get one. Okay. All right.
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll do two. So the first one, I start the book with this chapter, and it's super odd, and I recognize it's super odd, but I start the book by talking about imposter syndrome, because my hypothesis is that if you can't get over imposter syndrome and then what I call the lizard brain, and other people call the lizard brain, you're not going to have success in this role, because you're going to have a lot of self-doubt. You're not going to have confidence. You have to be able to get over that. And then the second thing, and this is probably the big takeaway, is that there is no magic bullet, no magic process. You have to kind of figure it out for yourself. And it also depends, obviously, on your own personality, but it depends on the type of work that you're doing, the type of agency that you're going to be working at, you know, the number of people that you're going to be overseeing, what type of those people. So the big takeaway is, like, there is no magic bullet. All you can do is prepare in the best way that you can and apply that critical thinking. And here are some ideas. Some of it is, you know, principles and more theoretical stuff. And some of it is nitty gritty, like, try this for your next ideation. I hate brainstorming, by the way. So I use the word ideation and the concepts around ideation, right? So it's kind of like part theory, but then it's also some things that you can employ right off the bat. So I would say that that's the big takeaway. It's like, buckle in. There's not an easy, follow these steps and you're going to get there. It's going to take exploration and it's going to take learning, but you're going to be much better prepared just by reading this short, 120 page book, because it's going to give you all the high, hard ones that you need to think about and consider as you step into the role.
Nice. Nice. Are you self-publishing this?
I am. Yeah.
Awesome.
I wanted to, this was one of my goals for the year, and I didn't want to delay. And, you know, and I know that it's kind of a long process to try and find a publisher. And I said, I don't want to wait. I want to try to get it out there. I want to try to help people. So I'm going to self-publish, and, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, that's great. There's a guy out there. I can't remember what his name is, but he's got a website. It's called Copywriting Course, I think is what it is. He self-published this book on how to be a copywriter.
Yeah.
It's, I think maybe 30 pages.
Wow.
And, he charges like $5. He's like, I want to give it away for free, but you got to pay for shipping.
Yeah.
And his whole thing is like, just how to write for emails, how to write for conversion. Like just really, really
I know who
niche.
You're talking about. Yeah. I heard this guy on a podcast. I think I know who you're talking. It's like how to write. It has a funny title, right? Like how to write.
Yeah.
Good or and, something like that.
And there's like, there's typos in there, you know, and he just like cranked it out. And, It's amazing. I think self-publishing is the best way to go. You're not looking for anybody else to distribute your book. I think if you're a designer out there, start writing. So, you know, get out there, put your stuff out there. I think it helps.
Yeah. You have to just get it out. You just have to get it out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Last question.
Yep. I can do this all day, by the way. I'm having a blast. So.
That is awesome. Since we're at the end here, I've seen a lot of different people critique work, you know, as it gets to the very end of a project. There's been ways I've seen a professor at Art Center, which I didn't attend, but there's a professor there that was famous for
rolling
the
young.
Work would come in. Yeah. I don't have to say it. Right.
Yeah.
So what would he do? Take the work and just rip it up, throw it across the room, berate you.
Yeah.
And that was it. And if you didn't rip it up and throw it away, it was like a success, right? There's like that extreme.
I love that
I just describe it and you already know.
Yeah.
And then there's the other way, right?
Yeah. I think my personal experience is you're going to get much better results using kindness and empathy and understanding and constructive criticism. You can still be direct and you can still be pointed and you can still be challenging. But I think it makes for a great story. And right. I've talked to some people who are with him, and I think it's you know, become part of the ethos, but they didn't end up that way. I was just talking to Will Chow from who oversees all of Whole Foods, their kind of in-house agency. And he was his student and he hasn't employed that. And he's been very successful. So I think it makes for good sort of like character development. But I personally think you get the best by, you know, by being as kind as you can, by being as empathetic as you can, by asking, you know, questions and, you know, by giving good, solid feedback and allowing people the room to make mistakes, because that's the only way that you're going to learn. And, you know, obviously it's okay to make a mistake. It's not great to repeat it, especially if it's some kind of like, you know, technical mistake or whatever. But I think that that's a better way to go. And on the flip side, you don't want to be fake. You don't want to give, if something is not good, you don't want to say that it's good just because you want to be nice. That doesn't work either.
Yeah.
But I think you just have to approach it from, you know, from the kindness way, that kindest way that you can give the feedback in the most empathetic way.
So Jaime Cabrera, you know, thank you so much. The book is What's the Big Idea? That's going to be available soon. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be
amazing.
It's going to be out on Black Friday. I'm going to try to do a pre-order here pretty soon so that people can pre-order it. But it will be out on Black Friday or Cyber Monday, whenever you want to buy it. But yeah, I'm hoping that that people pick it up and that they find it useful. And again, my end goal is to just help people, you know, be the best that they can and get fulfillment out of their work. And if I can save somebody a little bit of heartache or a little bit of you know, trouble from preparing them for this role, I feel like I will have done my job.
That's awesome. And where can they get it? So they can go to Amazon, I'm sure, but where do you want them to go?
Yeah, Amazon is the place to go. That's the best place to find it immediately. Hopefully it'll be available in other spots after that. There will be an ebook version as well. And I'm currently working on the audiobook version. So, you know, there'll be a number of ways that you can pick it up.
Awesome. You're not going to have like a whatsthebigidea.com website where we'll redirect?
Yeah, you can find, you're going to be able to find all the information at JaimeCabreraCreative.com.
Perfect.
I'm going to have obviously a link to the book. I am also going to offer, you know, coaching, individual one-on-one coaching for people that are aspiring to be creative directors or in the role already who need a little bit of help. It could be, you know, reviewing work or helping them prepare for a pitch, whatever that might be. Also for agencies, more of a consulting type of role, so they can find all that information. I'm also going to make tools available on the site, like creative brief tools, or you know, I talk about this document in the book called an A3 that I really like. Make those things downloadable. So I want to provide some value, some extra value for those people that purchase the book.
Amazing. I mean, thank you so much. I appreciate you being on. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you, man. I really enjoyed it. I seriously could do this all day. So thank you, Abelio.
I hope you learned as much as I did from Jaime. We'll talk soon. Connect with him on LinkedIn and myself. We'll see you soon.